to a weird show about freedom and cats. I'm Derek J. Here with me is Randy England. Hey, Randy.
The Wampus Cat. How are you, Derek?
The Wampus Cat. I am awesome. You know, Randy, our regular host, Michael Dean, he couldn't be with us tonight. We surrounded that fascist and forced him to surrender. But don't worry, we'll let him out of his cage after the show so he can archive the episode at freedomfiends.com.
He actually likes it.
Yes. You know, my nickname is the Warrant Canary. What's a Warrant Canary, Randy?
I think a Warrant Canary is a website that posts a sign that says, "We have not received any warrants to give away all your private information today." And if you ever go to that website and don't see that sign that's supposed to go up every day, then you know that they did get the warrant.
Can't now, stump the Wampus Cat.
How does that apply to you? I'm still thinking that one over.
Just because I'm a canary, like I'm pretty and I sing, you know, so I'm a I'm like a canary. And then I'm a warrant canary because I'll let the people know when something's wrong. I'm letting the people know that something's wrong with my victimless crime spree. You know about that.
I think that being the warrant canary means that you're the first one to be arrested.
that could be, too. Could be
and
that sort of situation.
We have to keep our eye on you, and at that point, we're next.
We are. We're all next. We're all next in line. So, speaking of being next in line, there's something of a police state going on, and you're sort of in the middle of it. You are broadcasting from Missouri.
And I am in the middle of Missouri.
Are you concerned about Ferguson? You got some rowdy neighbors, Randy.
I grew up about 10 miles from there.
Really?
And that
so you
is
know these
kind,
people.
Well, I know like them. They were their neighbors, or their parents were my neighbors.
Did they
run
you out of town?
No, I was across the river, actually, in Illinois, but not very far away. And that's kind of what's happening down there. It's pretty distressing, really. I mean, as far as what happened with this boy that was shot, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you hear what is said, and it raises all kinds of red flags. But I'm concerned about the things that I know about, the things that I see in the way that the police are behaving. It's really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I hadn't seen before today. I was looking at this and saw a couple of things where the police were openly harassing media who were just trying to cover the stories and the protests, and who were nowhere near interfering with them or anything like that. They shot a can of tear gas at a news crew that was filming.
See, your eyes deceive you. I heard that the police union spoke on this. They gave a press conference and said that they were helping the media. They were trying to help them pack up.
Well, and after they shot the tear gas at them and the media, the people that were there ran away. The news crew ran away to get away from the tear gas.
See how well it worked?
The cops came up and they were taking the equipment down, just like you said.
Yeah, see, it was helpful, and that's what we really need the police for. Now, you're not just some guy from Missouri. You actually are an attorney who used to be a prosecutor, so you must have extra spidey senses going off when you hear a story like this.
I'm just a guy from Missouri. Nothing special.
Oh, sure.
Being a former prosecutor leaves me more to atone for than anything else.
Yeah.
Well, there's some things to atone for in that. There's things that prosecutors do that I don't even agree with. Although at the time I was one.
Why'd you stop?
Well, it grew on me more and more that was not the place for me. The probably the drug war was the thing that finally, you know, was the last straw.
Well, wait a minute. If it's not the right thing for you, how long were you a prosecutor before you decided this, that it's not the right thing for you?
Well, 14 years.
And so what inspired you to start?
Start what?
Becoming a prosecutor. I mean, it's a long journey. It's a long road to, putting people behind bars.
No, that's not. If you think that if you don't have a problem with the laws, and most of them, and particularly ones that I had to enforce. Because, see, you think of the prosecutors and the villains, they're doing the drug laws and that. The majority of the cases aren't the drug cases. A lot of them are. But you're also doing, you know, good guy stuff, like prosecuting murderers and thieves and burglars and robbers and people that beat up other people and take their stuff and all of the things that would be necessary, whether you lived in any society, a completely free society, is going to have people that do what I did when I was a prosecutor. And, you know, I'm fine with that, but the certain things that the government does, you know, it becomes obvious that it's futile even before it becomes obvious that it's wrong.
So I've been in court a lot, and I have this vision of prosecutors of going out for lunch and having a beer and joking about how many people they put away. Do you keep a tally of that? Do you ever keep track how many people you put in jail? It must be a badge of honor, right?
I did keep track of my jury trials and how many I won and how many I lost. Now, as far as what the punishments were, I never cared. You know, it's funny when you're new. Well, what?
You didn't care what happened to these people? You just said, I'm just here to do a job, and long as I get mine.
You don't do the... No, I mean, I wasn't... I didn't care to keep a scorecard.
I see.
On what everyone was getting. Now, you got to realize, you know, you're having hundreds of cases every year. Now, not that many jury trials. I mean, I probably tried maybe close to 50 jury trials. Doesn't sound like that much, you know. But most of your trials are not jury trials. You know, most of them are, you know, bench trials just with a judge there. But, yeah, it's funny when you're early on, when you're a prosecutor and you get your first case in that, I mean, you just really, really want to win. And
did you win your first case?
Well, dumb luck, yeah.
All right. Beginner's luck.
Yeah, dumb luck. What can you say?
Was he a villain?
Not much of one. No. I think he was a... was caught driving while revoked.
That's kind of lame.
Which is a horrible, horrible crime. I mean,
lock him
prosecute.
Up.
Well, you know, most crimes, I mean, a lot of things are crimes where people get hurt. And those are fine. And then there's some crimes kind of like DWI where a person is, if someone's not hurt, at least someone is threatened. You've endangered other people, baby, okay? So, I mean, I understand the argument why DWI is still punishable when you put other people in harm's way. Now, whether you should do something that when nobody's harmed, I mean, I'm not sure where you go with that. I'm not positive. But and even drug laws, you can say, well, the drug laws, so somebody's being harmed, at least the people are harming themselves. But you got a guy who drives without a license or driving while revoked. Who are they harming? You know, if they're mm-hmm. not driving badly, you know, mm-hmm. if they get like a lot of people get caught because the cops say, oh, that guy, I got him a little while back. He doesn't have a license. They pull you over. You haven't done anything wrong. And then so here you are in court and they say, well, did you hurt anybody? No. Did you threaten anybody? No. Were you even hurting yourself? No. What was your crime? Defying the government. That's the whole crime.
That's the highest crime.
Yeah, and I have to explain that to my clients now. You know, they come in crying because they tick off the same points I did. I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't mean to hurt anybody. I wasn't hurting a soul. I was driving fine, and this cop that knew me saw me, and that was it. You know, I'm going, I said, you committed the highest crime on earth.
Mm-hmm.
You defied the government. And so that's kind of a sick crime, but you know their attitude is, well, what else can we do? You know, if you keep driving.
So you got out of it. You decided to say, I'm not going to participate in your immoral system. At least if I'm going to participate, I'm going to be defending those who have been charged with crimes instead of prosecuting them.
I don't know if I said anything that noble, but that was the idea. And, you know, I don't have to do anything for the government anymore. And if I only do criminal law, criminal defense, so I never have to be on their side anymore.
Well, what do you think about all these looters and people right near you who are reacting so poorly to another crime, a murder by a law enforcer? What do you make of all that?
Well, I mean, however much the looters may think they're being provoked, I think they're just thieves. I mean, they're not even attacking the people that they have a gripe with.
Should they be?
Well, they're not. I mean, what I'm saying is that there's people that are just peacefully protesting. You know, I mean, to complain about what the cop did to the kid when you don't know exactly what happened yet, that's one thing. And to complain about how the cops deal with people that are breaking store windows out and stealing stuff, that's another issue. And if the cops cross the line in either one of those areas, fine. You know, they should be criticized for it. But the thing that upsets me is the way they're dealing with peaceful protesters and even the news crews. The things that really were shocking in seeing that is that the police, in episode after episode, they escalate the situation. You have protesters who are making, you know, some noise and milling around or chanting or something. And then here come the police and everything gets 10 times as loud, 10 times as raucous. Then they start shooting the rubber bullets and the tear gas. And you're going, the police are not helping. What would have happened if the police hadn't shown up? I mean, most protests, you know what will happen if nobody shows up and pays any attention to the protest. They go home. There's nothing more to see. And so the police...
I wish that would happen with wars. Politicians threw a war and nobody came. That would be the best.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, police should always be taught, number one, to de-escalate every situation, and they don't.
Well, so that's what I want folks in Missouri to do, is go home and collect their thoughts, figure out a way to get justice. And now I want to ask you, because you're a person who pursued justice for many years, over a decade, and now you're still pursuing justice in a different way. What would justice look like in Missouri? What would justice look like for this teen, for this community? What would it look like to Randy? We'll have the answer to that question when we come back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
We're back.
We're here talking about justice. We're living in the Stone Age of justice, but hopefully we can get to the days of the Space Age justice that we all want to see. I envision a future where people Skype in to an arbitration service. There are many online, and they can just choose from whatever one they want. And the court, as it were, could be recorded just as any Skype conversation or video call. It could even be broadcasted on like Google Hangouts or some live website where everyone could watch, like a public trial. What do you think about that?
Well, if everyone's going to watch at the end, maybe they should all just vote.
Oh, that would be even cooler. Yeah, like you could use Bitcoin or something, some nominal amount of Bitcoin to count as a vote, from like each address or something, or you could figure out some way that people could vote, and that way you could have like a jury. Or would you want to? What do you think about the jury system? Is that a flawed system? Because I wouldn't want people to vote on me. What I would want is sort of like a Supreme Court jury, where it's like trained people you can trust.
People you can trust would make up their minds. Well, yeah. You know, and I think the jury is very important in our current system because it's 12 people that don't owe anything to the government. And they can come in if an abuse is bad enough, you know, they may well step up and say, no, we're not going to go along with that. But I'm not sure how important a jury would be in a free society.
It's interesting that you say they don't owe anything to the government, because that's hard to say about anyone these days.
Well, they don't make their living from the government. You go into a criminal case and you start out, you know, you got the prosecutor and he works for the government, and then you have mm-hmm. the impartial judge and they work for the government. I mean, first of all, that is, in any other walk of life, that is an intolerable conflict of interest. And, you know, people say, well, judges have rules of ethics and that they follow. You know, you go, yeah, but they're human. I mean, why even take the chance with the conflict of having the prosecutor who's up there pleading his case talking to another guy who works for the same guy? It's just kind of crazy when you think about it enough.
Oh,
the whole thing, you know, it's just nuts.
It is so nuts. I tried to make an example of a prosecutor one time, Randy. You would love this. I subpoenaed him, or I had him in sequestration during the whole trial. He had to wait to be last to be called up. He was like in a box by himself for like 5 hours. And then I finally called him up, and the questions I asked were regarding the nature of a prosecutor and his relationship with the judge and how he all works for the government and it's all on the same team and they go out. I even said the words like, you guys are all buddies, you're friends, you go out for drinks. And the judge said, yeah, I don't contest any of this. This is all true. We all know this. This is basic facts. You could like, let's dismiss this witness. We don't even need to hear this argument because we just accept it. It was so bizarre to me to hear a judge just say, well, yeah, we're all on the same team. What of it?
You're never going to be able to get away from that. And here's why. Excuse me. Although the judge and the prosecutor, they're in the courtroom all the time. But the public defender's in the same courtroom with those guys all the time, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got the good old boy thing. And actually, the defense attorneys that, say, practice in that particular county, they're in there with that prosecutor and with that judge all the time. And it's really kind of a double-edged sword. Because if I get a case where I'm defending someone in my county, And I look, and here's Prosecutor Joe, and I know him. I've worked with him many times. I know what he does. I know how he acts.
Right.
And it's in front of Judge Bob, and I know Judge Bob, and Judge Bob knows me. And there's a lot of different things going on, the whole dynamic. I hope that I have cultivated a relationship with Judge Bob, that when Randy gets up and says, Judge, such and such a case says such and such, and this is it, and the judge has heard this and checked me enough times, he trusts me when I say it. In fact, I hope he trusts me more than he trusts the prosecutor when he does it. So you have all kinds of advantages running, you know, to your side, even if you're the defendant, if your lawyer knows what the judge is like, is trusted by the judge, if the lawyer knows the prosecutor.
Mm.
And when I go to another county where I don't go very often, and I have to go to that court, man, I'm at a disadvantage.
You lose that home turf advantage.
And my client is at a disadvantage. And what I do, I get on the phone, I call the public defender there and question him about it, what everybody does, because they know that stuff. I need to know what's going on whatever turf I'm on.
We always need to know what's going on. And we're going to answer that question about justice. What's real justice look like, Randy?
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Yeah.
Worms.
Meow.
Hey, it's Monday morning in Missouri here.
Meow at me, Randy.
Meow.
Meow. All right, we're talking about the free future. What's law going to look like in libertarian paradise? Lay it on me, Randy.
What will it look like?
You've been there. You've been to the future. You've seen it. Tell us what it looks like.
But I'm back. I'm back from the future. Everyone has heard of the legal maxim, ignorance of the law is no excuse. And the purpose of that is that it prevents anybody who's charged with violating the law to say, I didn't know about the law. I mean, it's not my fault that I did it. And you kind of understand that if all you had to do was say, I didn't know, then anyone would be able to do anything they wanted and no one could hold them responsible for it because they didn't know.
That would be problematic.
Yeah, so the idea that ignorance of the law is no excuse, I mean, it's not as unfair as it might sound. Simply, if you go back, you know, a couple hundred years or so, when the only laws that existed were laws against harming other people or their property, then everything you needed to know about the law, you probably learned by the time you were 5 years old. Because your mother taught you, and you knew that if you went and broke out somebody's window or stole money from them or smacked the kid next door, that you're probably going to be in trouble. And it really didn't matter whether you knew if that was written down somewhere that you would get in trouble. And so it wasn't unfair to say, no, I don't have to tell you every little thing that you can't do. You know you can't do this, and now you got to make it right, pay the price, however you want to put that.
Yes, little rules we all learn in kindergarten.
Exactly. And so at that basic level, everybody knows that law. And but today, of course, you know, we've got a completely opposite situation. You know, the ignorance of the law has never been more widespread because the criminal law now prohibits so much conduct that's not intuitively evil. One time I went and did a kind of a search. Well, I gathered the stuff slowly. You know, I told you I was a prosecutor earlier, and I had many occasions to be looking through the criminal law for this or that, and I used to run into these nuttiest, craziest things that are crimes, or at least crimes in my state.
Is that just a big book that you would flip open? Do the prosecutors have access to a big book of laws?
Big special books. You know, there's so many. The federal criminal code and the sentencing guidelines alone are almost 2,500 printed pages.
Wow.
And that's just the code. That's not all of the miles and miles of court cases that construe those cases. It doesn't include all the various state criminal codes, county, municipal ordinances.
Right, and they all have references to, like, other books, too, right? So you have to have, like, a library of these books to even read a page of the thing.
Well, that's true. And nobody really can know all the, I mean, criminal lawyers and prosecutors and judges, they don't know this law either.
If this were programming code, everyone would be fired. Because programming code has to be nice and neat and clean and have comments. And you can't just reference, like, bizarre other books. This wouldn't fly in the free future. We're not going to have it this way.
That's true. When the police, when they arrest somebody, I mean, they're going to have maybe a rough idea of what crime has been committed, but they're not really sure until they get back. And the police, rather than having these big books, they have these kind of shortened, kind of simplified charging manuals that they can go and they can look through it and find a crime to fit whatever.
Yeah, I've seen those. They only have 2 pages. It's resisting arrest and disorderly conduct.
Now you're being cynical.
No, I've seen those books, right? I think some people have probably seen them when they get pulled over. Because I see cops, sure. They go back into their car, and then they're looking through some thick book to decide, well, what can I get this guy on?
That's exactly what they're going through. They're charging manuals. But the police very often will get it wrong, because police don't charge crimes. Prosecutors charge crimes. So the police send their tickets or they send their reports over to the prosecutor's office, and the prosecutor has to look at it, and they're the ones that always decide exactly what crime is going to be charged, and they have to dig into the books too to find out what they're going to charge. And when I was, you know, digging into these books, from that, the stuff that I found, like I was really horrified to find that I had just recently violated one of the laws that said you can't bury a deceased pet in your own yard.
Did you charge yourself with a crime?
I had a dead cat buried out in my backyard, and a, you know, a little rock with its name.
Well, you better dig it up, Randy, or else you're going to jail.
Statute of limitations has passed now. Whew. But going through these, I found one that made it was a crime to raise your arms while riding a roller coaster.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And there's some other really cool ones.
Not in like America.
Possessing a baby raccoon is a good one. And here's one I love. Releasing a swine.
Releasing them. You can only capture them.
Releasing the swine. It's amazing. The stuff that you can do, and you never know. Well, anyway, the ignorance of the law is no excuse. That's really an ignorant maxim now. But on the other hand, you stop and think about this. It was once, you know, back in the old days when the laws were basically had to do with whether people had been hurt or not. Mm-hmm. You knew if you'd done wrong, and to say, well, ignorance of the law is no excuse, that's not unfair. That's okay. But ignorance of the law today, with all these laws that no one could possibly know, not even when the police have to look through the book, when the prosecutors do, the judges do, then that maxim has never been more unfair. But at the same time, and this is my point, it's never been more essential to the operation of the whole criminal court system.
Mm-hmm.
Because if ignorance of the law were an excuse, the whole thing would be a complete nut chaos. It would just, they couldn't do anything at all, because people would honestly be saying, I didn't know. I buried this stupid cat in the backyard and I didn't.
Well, you should have read the criminal code. It was your summer reading list.
I could have read the criminal code, but we break the law all the time. I mean, there's a law. I ran across one where there's this kind of a thistle that it's against the law to let grow on your property.
There's all kinds of crazy. There's like books of crazy laws. They sell books of them at like booksellers, where you can look and laugh at all the ridiculous laws that people are breaking. In Wyoming, you can't look up while you urinate, or all sorts of ridiculous laws. You know, I think they should change the maxim, Randy, to ignorance of the nap is no excuse. And by that, I mean the non-aggression principle. The idea that if you are, because it's not the law that we're talking about. Man creates laws, right? But the non-aggression principle, I think, is a little bit different. Maybe you can explain. Do you think that would be a good replacement first of all?
It would be fine. And if the law just simply meant violating the non-aggression principle, I wouldn't quibble about the word.
And by that, I mean you don't initiate force or fraud against anyone. And if you do, then you're in trouble.
That's all there is to it. I don't even go anywhere else. I'm kind of a thin libertarian.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, just that I try to keep the things that I talk about and even think about and insist upon with the non-aggression principle. If you try to get outside that and go to all these other causes that everybody has, I mean, you have favorite things that you would like to see, and I have favorite things, And some of those will overlap, and some of them won't. And everybody has their own kind of vision for what would be an ideal society. But the idea is to get to the lowest common denominator. I think it was St. Augustine. You know, he had this idea of there was the city of God and the city of man, and you had the good guys had to live together with the bad guys till the end of the world, and there's no way they could get along or agree on everything that should be done. So what they should just simply agree on is that there should be peace and security, and the rest of it can get sorted out when this is all over here.
Yeah, I agree. We've got big fish to fry in terms of bringing the world to a more free and peaceful society with justice. And I'm glad that you spend your life working towards justice. You know, justice is something that all societies are going to need, free or not free, but especially those of us that are not free now. Are you able? What's it like putting a murderer away? Like, have you? I assume you do this on a regular basis. Are you used to? You don't prosecute.
I used to. As a matter of fact, the last jury trial I tried as a prosecutor was a murder case. And
wow,
you know, it's kind of funny. I think I was mentioning earlier when I was a young prosecutor and had my first few cases, I was real excited about doing it. Of course, I was really scared too, but really excited about doing it and really wanted to win and get this guy. And when it was done, you know, you'd almost go floating out of the courtroom just dancing. I mean,
right.
I don't know if I'd admit that, you know, but
you were very happy.
No, you just go out and you're happy, you know, and most of the time, you know, the guy was a bad guy and, you know, and he had coming what he got. But, you know, it wasn't always that way. I mean, sometimes they were drug cases, drug dealers mostly. And those, you know,
hard to feel like John Wayne on those.
Yeah. But in the early days, I think I felt that way. But one funny thing that happened as time went on was that I stopped glorying in the wins. I mean, prosecutors win most of their cases, and I don't say that in any way because they're great or special or particularly good. But the way when you're a defense attorney, they send you the reports and you read it and you go, well, this is the hand I'm dealt. Okay, if it was a card game.
Yes.
Well, that's not how it works when you're a prosecutor. When you're a prosecutor, the police send you over all of the reports that they want charges to be filed on. Like, this is a cop wish list they're sending.
Wow.
And I'm reading it, and I pick one up, and I look at it, and I go, don't like that hand. Trash.
So you're Santa Claus for police.
No, I'm a poker player. I'm a poker player who gets to just pick up a new hand whenever he sees one he doesn't like.
Not bad.
I don't file those cases as a prosecutor. Huh. I put them in the refuse pile, and they never again see the light of day. I don't know how they are everywhere, but around here, in the offices that I worked in, we had about 15 to 20% refusal rate. When the cops sent them over, that many never saw the light of day. They just said, nope, no good, no case.
I want to see closer to 50%, because at least half of those are drug cases. They need to be all thrown out. We'll be back. We're going to talk about another victimless crime, raw milk.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Meow, meow. Freedom Fiends. Real. Tasing you with liberty. Hey, Randy. Let's talk about Ferguson again a little bit. There's some horrible stuff happening, and the people out in the world want to know your opinion, because you're a lawyer. But you're sort of dodging giving an opinion about Ferguson. Why is that? I don't know why you're dodging that, Randy, but, you know, hopefully we can learn more about that. It's also curious to me that you're broadcasting from Jefferson, Missouri, or Jefferson City, Missouri, which is the capital of Missouri. And capitals are places where there's almost no people.
Oh, my.
It's almost never
gone.
Any people. Welcome back, Randy.
So I'm sorry why is there, you lost me.
It's quite all right. So why are there almost no people?
I lost you.
It's okay. You were here now. So why are there almost no people in all capital cities? Why is that such a big failure of government?
Almost no people? You mean small populations?
Yeah, like, you know, it seems like governments tried to pick, like, oh, that's going to be our star city. That'll be the capital. You know, like, if an army invades, they have to get that city before they win the whole state. But then they pick a loser city like Jefferson City, Missouri, instead of Kansas City or St. Louis.
Well, when you stop and think about the government picking winners and losers,
not a good track record.
Will they do any better in picking a city? But one thing that you probably, you know, need to consider is that in many cases, they kind of pick a place that's central.
Right.
And I don't know about, you know, every other state, but in my state, you have the only big town back when Missouri became a state was 1820. That would have been in St. Louis.
Yeah, doesn't it have water nearby?
Well, the Mississippi River runs by there, and the Missouri River runs into the Mississippi just north of St.
Yeah,
Louis.
But, of important. Maybe they should have chosen that. Everyone else chooses things near water.
No, you know, it was more important back then that it be a central location. We have things in our Constitution that says that the county capital can only be so many miles from everywhere else in the county. We're talking about how far you could go in a day on a horse and things like that. And so they wanted a place, they selected a place that was on the Missouri River, so it was easy to get to and was centrally located. And if you look at the map, Jefferson City is sitting smack in the middle of the state. And it's right on the Missouri River, which was the only way to get out here back in 1820. There weren't any roads. So there was some sense to it. But they were picking a spot just based on the geography. And there was no reason to think that this location would ever be financially viable or would be a great place to live because there were no mosquitoes or something. And so we have a state that we have a city that is less than 50,000, and half the people that live here work for the government.
Yikes.
And that's kind of how it, I mean, it's
that's,
not surprising.
That's how it is for a lot of capital places. Well, that's interesting. We were talking, speaking of capital places, there's a man in Ottawa who's going through some troubles with the top court. A man named Michael Schmidt, who's been made famous for selling raw milk to his customers in Ottawa and around there. The law, it goes basically like this, if I were to lay it out to a lawyer who had never heard the story before. There's a guy who sells raw milk, but that's against the law. So instead of selling the raw milk, he told the people, hey, you can own a cow. You just own 1/50th of a cow. And now I'm dispensing your milk to you. Well, the top court heard that, and they said, no can do, not going to fly. Well, he owes them money, and he's not going to pay, and he's going to keep dispensing the milk. What do you think, Randy? Should this guy be put away for a long time?
I don't know that they'll put him away a long time, but the top court was wrong.
They're wrong. We're going to get into why they're wrong and what people should do about it. I want to see more people like Michael Schmidt standing up and saying, raw milk, drugs, gay marriages, whatever you want. Let's just all do it without permission. Worms. Say worms, Randy.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Well, worms.
Worms. This is Freedom Fiends.
We're still here. Let's go to the Agora.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Cat, I think we're still having technical problems here on this end.
Okay, Wampus Cat, we'll get you back. Well, right now, this is the Freedom Fiends, and we'll be back with the Wampus Cat if he's got something special he'd like to share. You know, he's been our guest for the first hour of the show, and we look forward to having him for hour two, if we can. This is Derek J., the Warrant Canary, here with you. Broadcasting from Keene in the Shire. You can learn about me at derekj.me and this show, Freedom Fiends, at freedomfiends.com. We're talking about a weird Supreme Court case out of Canada where a raw milk advocate is vowing to continue to give people milk, even though the court doesn't want him to. The Supreme Court of Canada will not even hear an appeal from the Ontario farmer who has long championed the right to sell and drink unpasteurized milk. But he says it's not the end of the road. The top court's refusal to hear Michael Schmidt's case, as it usually did not provide reasons, means his 2011 conviction of 13 charges under the Health Protection and Promotion Act and the Milk Act that saw him fined $10,000 stands. He will, however, continue his crusade to provide people who wish to buy raw milk with the unpasteurized product. The Ontario government maintains the unprocessed milk poses a significant risk to public health. The Schmidt insists there's no evidence to anyone that anyone's ever fallen ill from his milk. And the supporters argue raw milk offers health benefits. Quote, "I don't think it's the end of the road at all," he said from his farm in Durham, Ontario, south of Owen Sound. Quote, "I think it was a ruling on a very specific case, a very specific situation. I think it will become a more political issue now than a legal issue." Ontario does not ban the consumption of raw milk, and farmers are allowed to drink the milk produced by their own cows. Earlier court decisions have found that Schmidt's method of allowing consumers to buy an ownership interest in a dairy cow was little more than a way to circumvent the rules. What do you think,
hey,
Randy?
Derek, I'm
Randy.
Back, Derek.
Hey, sounds like you're back with us. Welcome.
Yeah.
So
my quality may be down. I came back. My internet went down.
Did the riots get to you, Randy?
I think that we've had some rioting, perhaps
some looters
outside my house.
They stole your Wi-Fi.
Yeah. But I think my it may be coming back up. So at our next break, I'll connect up with my good sound. Right now you're hearing this over Skype on a cell phone. How's
oh,
it coming
wow
through?
It sounds quite all right. I thought you were going to say we're on dial-up. That would be in real trouble. So what do you make of this raw milk farmer saying, "I don't care what you say, top court, I'm going to keep doing what I want with my cows"? Is he a villain who should be caged?
I think he's gutsy. I mean, he's going to have to, if he stands against them, and he's already been to the highest court, what choice does he have? They'll either throw him in jail. I don't know what the punishment is, but they'll either throw him in jail or they'll fine him and then start taking his property, or throw him in jail for not paying the fine.
What's the worst that could happen? I mean, I think taking his property is probably the worst, because as a farmer, that's what you've got, right? That's what produces your value. You're a business. And if they take that away, then he's got nothing.
You know, it depends on what the what their particular statutes say. I mean, for all I know, maybe they have a forfeiture statute. They can take your farm if you violate the agricultural laws of the province or something like that. Sort of like taking your car for drugs or your house for drugs, that sort of thing. I don't know. They'll do whatever they want.
Right. Well, and that's why I encourage people not to take the plea deal at all. Like, this guy, he took it all the way to the top court and then even got found guilty, convicted, and still refuses to respect their authority. But have you heard of this Don't Take the Plea Deal outreach? It's something I do weekly here in Keene, standing outside. But many other people around the country do it, handing out flyers to people who are walking into court charged with crimes and encourage them to not take a plea deal. You probably offered people plea deals as a prosecutor, didn't you?
Routinely. And as a defense attorney, I routinely bring them to them. Of course, you're required to. If a prosecutor makes an offer, you, of course, inform your client, even if they say they haven't the slightest interest in that. You know, I really admire anyone who is willing to stand up to the system. The only thing that I strongly disapprove of is someone going into this without having their eyes wide open. I mean, you really need to know what will happen. One thing I have noticed in about activities there in New Hampshire and in your town in Keene, it seems that I don't know what word to use, get away with not taking plea deals and forcing people to trial in that. And even after doing that, they don't punish you very much for exercising those rights.
No, I think that would be a political that would be political suicide for a lot of the judges and prosecutors, or the people who could get elected again.
Well,
I think sheriffs.
You may be doing some good up there, because in many places and here in my state, if you do that, you're going to suffer, and you're going to suffer very badly, both in state court, federal court, municipal court. They're going to hurt you, and they're going to hurt you much worse.
Yeah, but they know that's not going to work here. Yeah, but that's not going to work here in Keene. Yeah, in most places, when you take something to court, they do want to punish you for it. And they'll say, like, Rich Paul was offered, he's a cannabis activist here in Keene, New Hampshire, and he was charged with selling cannabis, and he was facing 81 years in prison, all told, with his charges. And he decided to refuse the plea deal that he was offered of 0 days in jail if he would just admit guilt, and he wouldn't do it. He said, no, I'm not taking the plea deal. I want to bring this before a jury of my peers and let them decide whether or not I'm a real criminal who belongs in a cage. Unfortunately, they made the wrong choice, in my opinion. They did decide to prosecute him. But why should people be refusing these plea deals, Randy? Do you agree with me that people should be refusing them?
I believe that's got to be their choice. And that, like for me, it's not my choice at all. I mean, like I said, I admire anyone that will do that. But it's my job to say to them, okay, if you do that, here's what will probably happen. And I'm just saying that just from my experience,
What would happen if more people took their cases to trial? You get a speeding ticket, you get charged with having an open container of alcohol, maybe you're an underage drinker, college student. If you took those things
took
to trial, what would happen?
The whole system would grind to a halt.
And you know that from experience, right?
Well, I know when I was a prosecutor, I might try a couple of cases, a couple of trials in a week, but I was handling, you know, 50 cases. I couldn't try 50 cases every week. I mean, how is that possible?
Well, how did you do the mental math to decide which ones you're going to drop and which ones you're going to pursue? Did you roll dice?
I almost never dropped anything.
Oh, wow.
You remember the part I was telling you earlier about how I don't file anything that I know except is strong and that I can win?
Right.
Well, then why would I drop one?
So does that mean there were a bunch of arrests made that never went anywhere?
Oh, of course. 15 to 20%.
Of what?
In my experience, of people that when they arrest people and they put together their police reports and they send a request to the prosecutor along with the reports saying, please prosecute this person. And they always suggest a charge, and then you look at it and you go, yeah, this is garbage, and then you throw it on the refused pile.
I think that's what happened to me. Hey, Randy, once upon a time I went into City Hall and I was recording with my video camera, and a bailiff didn't like it, and he arrested me, said I was charged with disorderly conduct, one of those carry-all charges, it covers everything. And the day before trial, I got a message from the prosecutor saying, Derek, that charge has been dropped. You don't have to show up in court tomorrow. So is that exactly what was happening?
That's exactly what. You know, the prosecutors, I mean, you don't know how many times I've dropped a case and then I had a cop call me and was angry that I did it.
Wow.
And, you know, you have to explain why. You know, you say, look, you did this, you did that. I said, if I were to file this, I said, your career would take a hit and you would be embarrassed by this. I said,
did you make enemies that way?
Yes. One time, an entire contingent from the Missouri Highway Patrol, they sent over three of their high up guys over to our office to see if they'd get me fired.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like a show of force.
There's a rule about that. When the more cop, normally the cops just send over the things that they want to have filed. Like it'll just come over by courier or some secretary will bring the stuff over.
Right.
And that's how most of it comes to you. If a cop comes in the door and says, I want to see Randy, and he comes in and puts it on my desk, red flag goes up. Okay. Why is this cop here needing to plead the case? You know? Can't his report? There's something wrong with this case. I mean, you smell a rat as soon as you see a cop with a report in his hand. And when two cops come, you're really in trouble. And they gang up and they bring higher ranking cops as they want to press more.
Why? What do you think they're doing?
They want these cases filed.
Why do they want it so much?
Well, they want all their cases filed, but they come to you with the cases that are problem cases. Well, they'll come down and you look at the case and you say, hey, look, this isn't good for this reason, or this is going to get thrown out because it's an illegal search, whatever the reason is, it shouldn't be done. And they say, but Randy, don't you understand what a bad guy this is?
Randy understands how bad these guys are.
What does that got to do with it? What has that got to do with anything?
He gets it. Hey, Randy, you're also the author of Free is Beautiful.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hey, this is Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the... You know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Excuse.
Never.
I won't have it. Not in this courtroom. Hey, free is beautiful. Why Catholics should be libertarian is the name of your book.
That's my book. Yep. Yep.
I want gay married couples to defend their marijuana plants with AK-47s. Why am I wrong? Am I wrong?
I don't think you are wrong.
All right. Oh, that's the answer I wanted to hear. That's because, you know, one hears the title of a book like that and thinks, well, this guy's a real square. He's not going to
want. Now, hold on. I am really square, okay?
You're defending your squareness.
Finish.
You told me you grew up in the 60s, 70s. You say dude. You called me man earlier. So, you know, what's with all this?
Well, I know. And Michael hopes that heroin will be sold from vending machines.
How do you feel about that as a libertarian Catholic?
I don't. I'm totally against it. Listen, wow. when I was a little kid, I used to go and spend a lot of time at my grandparents' house up in central Illinois, and there was a tavern there. And, you know, I would go in there, and I didn't know any of those guys that were in there, but they all knew me. You know, I mean, here's some five-year-old going into the tavern to get a chocolate soda, and they go, hey there, England, you know, and I felt like a big guy. But there's no way on earth I would have ever walked in there and bought an alcoholic beverage. I could not have done it. There's no way the owner of that tavern would have done that. And it didn't matter what the law was. I don't even, the law meant nothing.
Couldn't you say it was for your dad?
If they thought it was for my dad, maybe so. But I'm saying they would never have sold me a beer in that place.
To go drink. Like if you're like, oh, I had a rough one today.
As a kid. And it would never happen. And in most society, and people will live in a free society, they will live in environments that they like. But there will be many environments that are kind of like old timey, like back 19th century, where everybody in the town looked out for everybody else's kid and wouldn't. And if their kid was doing things they shouldn't know, it would get back to mom and they would never dream of giving the kid cigarettes or giving the kid anything that would be bad for them. And I think that's a wonderful thing, that it would be voluntary.
So you're for a nanny state, just minus the state. You just want nannies around.
I love nannies. I have nannies.
You're pro-nanny.
I have a nanny. Yeah. I'm saying, well, I think it's great when, you know, the whole community, you know, watches out for your kids. That's kind of the way that I grew up.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s, I couldn't do anything without somebody reporting, you know, to my mother, you know, what was going on. Most of the time I didn't get in trouble. I only found out when I was grown up how everyone reported on everybody's kids in the whole neighborhood all the time.
Yeah. We do it now, too. It's just more high tech.
No, they bring in the cops and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
now,
right.
And they bring in DFS
but
and all that
But you can tweet
garbage.
To the cops.
Yeah, that would
it's
that
an
would
improvement.
Make it, that would mean no, it's not. That's it worse. The whole thing, it's just bad. Well, anyway, the heroin vending machine. You know, in no neighborhood that I would be willing to work in would there ever be a heroin vending machine.
What would you do about it? Say I live in your neighborhood and I put up a heroin vending machine. What are you going to do to me?
Well, I would probably be in, if it was a problem, we'd probably, well, there's a couple things we could do. First of all, we could shun you, okay?
All right.
We don't need this in our neighborhood.
Too late for that.
All right.
I'm already unpopular.
It's probably too late to have a homeowner's agreement that's not going to happen. Seriously, I mean, I imagine there would be a whole lot of social pressure. Well, if you dug a big hole with a lion in it out in your front yard, I guess we'd get upset about that, too.
Well, you make an interesting point about the homeowner's agreement, because this problem probably would never become an issue, because I would never even live in the neighborhood, right? Because I can't agree to the terms. If I want to push heroin from my lawn, then there's going to be some agreement with the neighbors that says, hey, we're not cool with that. We don't want that kind of neighborhood. And yeah, so yeah, I'm going to have to move somewhere else.
We can't put you in jail, but we're going to get rid of you, you know?
We're going to make it as uncomfortable as we possibly can.
You know, and there's going to be difficult situations like that, but aren't there now? I mean, you know, we're not promising perfection here.
Yeah.
So it's going to be that way, and there's going to be...
Are there going to be anti-gay neighborhoods so that people can be happy about that?
I think that
would be kind of cool. There was a gayborhood that I lived in Philadelphia, and I knew what parts of the city I was welcome in and what parts I wasn't, and everyone seemed pretty okay with that.
You mean it was good to know?
Yeah, sometimes segregation is voluntary. Worms.
Yes.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. RATS is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. RATS was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. RATS is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download RATS free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Cat.
We're back.
And the Warrant Canary, bringing it to you live.
And if you're still there, then I must still be here.
here we are. So there's some trouble. There's some trouble in Kansas. No, this is in Ohio. Outraged strippers protest topless in front of local church, sort of on the topic we were talking about voluntarily segregating oneself from a community. Or forming a community?
That's a problem that would not occur in a free society and with private property.
That's right. Yeah, if everything were private property. So often, the conflicts involving human beings who have disagreements comes down to the land they're standing on isn't owned by anybody. They claim it's public property, and then they have these disagreements. And it's not very clear what the rules are on those pieces of land.
And everybody wants to use that property in ways that they may like and other people may find offensive. And it causes conflict. You know, you said earlier about you didn't mind the fact that there might be an enclave where they didn't allow anyone who was gay or black or something like that.
They allow them. They just don't want to see you holding hands and stuff like that. Can't be kissing in the streets. You know, there's some places that's not welcome.
But all that proves that you're saying they can do that if they want, that you are a true I don't know what word you prefer, libertarian, voluntarist, anarchist. That you are a true one. You know, there's nothing worse than having, you know, I can meet somebody and then they tell me about how they're a libertarian. Then I talk to them a little bit and then they find out that the only thing they're in favor of is pot smoking, and because they're a pot smoker and they're really not a libertarian at all. They just know that under libertarianism it would be legal, and that's what they are. But when it comes to everything else, apparently they're fine with the state. I don't consider that a libertarian. You're a libertarian when you're willing to tolerate things that you abhor.
Wow, I agree with you. I was so upset this week. I saw a ruling, I think it was out of Colorado or some similar place, where a gay couple sued to have their wedding somewhere. So they wanted to have a wedding on this piece of property, private property, and it was so beautiful, it had to be that one. And they're lesbians, and the owner of the property said, no. You know, we do weddings here. It's against my religion. I don't support your gay marriage. Find somewhere else to do it. And instead of just going where they're welcome and refusing to give money where they're unwelcome, instead of doing that, they went and sued this guy and won, in air quotes, the right to have their marriage there. Now, I see that as a great tragedy of property rights, because, and it's a tragedy for all of humanity, because they're not learning the lesson to go where you're wanted and spend money on people who will, you know, like, reward the people who like you and don't reward the people who don't support your lifestyle.
If they're just lucky that they didn't sue over making a wedding cake or something.
It's all ridiculous. You can't make people do things.
You don't dare get crossways with the person who's preparing your food in private.
Right.
Just never. It's a rule that everybody ought to know from this high up.
Well,
it's,
all my gay brethren are cheering about the cake thing, the marriage thing. Yay, we won the rights. And I'm like, no, you're using the government gun to force this man to allow his property to be used in a way that he disagrees with on, like, a deep fundamental level. You know, it's a religious objection, and I'm not religious myself, but I get that it comes from a place, like, deep inside. It's in your heart, you know. So this is a problem that he's got, and the state is walking all over him. So I wonder, as the author of a book titled Free, what's this? It's escaping
Free
me.
Free is
moment.
Beautiful.
Free is Beautiful, Why Catholics Should Be Libertarian. Do you have that view of libertarianism or anarchism, that there is a higher, well, it's God, right? So God is your master instead of the state?
We believe in God, but that's just totally voluntary.
Yeah, because there are a lot of Christians that I speak with. I was raised Christian, and a lot of them make really strong arguments for anti-statism, like, oh, the state shouldn't be involved because, you know, they're not my master, God's my master, stuff like that. Do you see it that way?
Well, I do see it that way, but if the state, if the laws, there's the word we were talking about, non-aggression principle, if you limited that to things that were legitimate, I mean, you and I wouldn't have any quarrel. You know, you and I have no quarrel with the law against murder, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if they could abolish that law, we would still be against it, and we could probably assume that we would be caught and punished or hurt or something would be done to us.
Yeah.
If we did it, whether there was a law on the books or not. I don't know. As a Christian, there are many, many, many. I mean, you've surely heard the story about the Israelites begging back when they didn't have a king.
They begged for a king.
Yeah, they were ruled by these judges. And you read the Old Testament, and they had their law, you know, that Moses gave them. But the judges didn't do anything except resolve disputes. And if there was a war or something, they, you know, were leaders in wartime, and that was all they did. I mean, they didn't do much more than the mayor of the Shire, you know, and the Lord of the Rings. You know, there's you have examples like that, and then when they wanted a king, and this huge long warning is issued. You know, it's longer than something a lawyer would write, telling them all the reasons why you don't want a king. And the Israelites, who seem to spend the entire Old Testament doing just crazy things, you know, that make no sense at all. Say, yeah, we want that king. We want everybody like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And it was just horrible. And then there's plenty of things, even in the New Testament, you know, where you have after Jesus came, and you know, you get his attitude about victimless crimes. Like,
did he talk about that?
Well, here's an example. We were just talking about being gay and gay conduct, in that, you know, there are lots of sexual crimes that are or have been punishable, you know, by the law. I mean, other things, too. I mean, adultery and prostitution is still illegal in most places.
Right.
And that's a good example. One time Jesus was sitting around and
he was always hanging out with prostitutes.
The religious leaders brought this woman that had been caught in the middle of adultery and brought her to him and said, "We caught this woman in adultery." And of course, the law required that she be stoned to death.
Yikes.
And they were going to trap Jesus, you know, to get him to say yes or no. And then they could use that against him. And everybody knows the story about what he said. He said, "Well, let whichever one of you is without sin cast the first stone." Now, that was a golden opportunity.
Zing.
It was a golden opportunity for Jesus to uphold the law, though, and say, "Well, the law says you must stone her." And he could have set a good example by picking up the first rocks and bashing her brains in.
Yeah.
And he said no. He established a pattern how to handle this victimless crime that really was just a matter of personal, it was morals.
That would have been pretty weak. And I also like, as though I'm not a Christian, I like that parable, because the answer is to look inside. Like, the answer when, you know, "Oh, there's all this trouble out here. Look at this person is screwing things up." And that can be more generally prescribed as, well, when you're looking at the problems out in the world, take a look inside and fix those problems first. Maybe that's where you should be focusing.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of great lessons to draw from it, you know. And what you're saying, not only look inside, but I see a big mind your own business there. You know,
yeah.
If I went through when I was writing my book, and I'm finding all the different things that really show that you really ought to leave other people's lives alone. You wouldn't believe how many places there are where there's strong condemnations of what they call busybodies.
Really? And are there places about, like that? Says, the U.S. you know, is all busybodies.
Oh, yeah. St. Paul writes in his letters, "I hear that you people are just going around talking about one another from one place to the next, and you're always got your nose in everybody else's business."
Well, there wasn't Facebook back then, so they had to do it some other way.
Just go home and mind your own business. It's not your problem. And, I mean, that's... You know, if people were just kind of committed to that and never heard of the non-aggression principle, it would just make things much nicer.
That would
much
change
nicer.
The world.
Hey, well, yeah, mind your own business. I mean, it was a great Hank Williams song, too.
Speaking of minding your own business, yeah, that was the first thing printed on American money, was mind your business.
In God we trust,
but mind your business. Another interesting thing about minding your business, I wanted to bring this up with you because you are a lawyer or an attorney. And I was recently denied the right to carry a gun in my pocket. I can carry it unloaded in my pocket, but if it's loaded, that's a crime in New Hampshire because I've been denied. I had to ask some busybody's permission in order to have the ability to do that lawfully. And now I'm mad about it. What's your reaction?
Well, you shouldn't have to. I don't know. The law is different in every state. In some states are what they call shall issue states, where unless you're a felon or a mental patient, you know, it's usually a short list of people that are not allowed to have them.
Well, New Hampshire is a shall issue state, so this is a place where I expected, you know, you pay the $10, you fill out the form, and they're supposed to give you one. But they said no.
Unless you tripped over one of the statutory acceptors that throw you out, they have to give you one. And if you'd have to take them to court to force them, you'd file a writ of mandamus to force an office holder. I assume it's an office holder, like a sheriff or something.
It's the chief of police.
The chief of police you'd have to file in the local court there, the county court or however you guys are set up, a lawsuit to compel the chief to issue that concealed carry permit.
Oh, I'm doing it, baby. I'm doing it. It's happening. September 8th is my date. So
he's going to have to point to the exact thing that throws you out, or he's got to give it to you. You'll win.
Got to give it up. Going to make that chief of police squeal on the stand.
Can I watch it on the internet?
Sure can. Hopefully it's live stream. Derek J versus Keene Police.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
We're back.
Redemption in the third act. Let's do it, Randy.
Yeah,
so we got lots of positive stories about police, because sometimes I get on a roll talking about police abuse stories. We talked about Ferguson. That's a nightmare. There are plenty of bad cop stories out there, but I thought I would take an opportunity to do something strange and share a positive cop story. You know, we talked about Mike Brown, the young man who was shot by a police officer earlier in the week, and that sparked protests, peaceful and not peaceful. One of the peaceful marches, though, was attended by a police captain. Did you hear about this, Randy?
I did not hear about it, and it's sort of surprising because the good guys don't always get that high up.
Yeah, that's right. They're often only the people who are the nasty ones are the ones who get rewarded, right?
Yeah, I would be curious as to why or what he was protesting exactly.
Well, here it is. Headline: on Thursday afternoon, Missouri State Highway Patrol Captain and 27-year veteran of the force, Ronald Johnson, was announced to be taking over security decisions in the outraged city of Ferguson, and law enforcement intends to stay involved, but the highway patrol is now directly on the ground. I guess this isn't here it is. It's got pictures of Ron Johnson leading protesters on a march through Ferguson. Pictures that were tweeted out by John Swain and many others, thousands of retweets on that. And I think here's another tweet. Says, leadership matters. Missouri Highway Patrol Captain Ron Johnson's impact already being felt. What do you think about that?
I feel like I'm being manipulated.
Huh. Why is that? I mean, these are just regular people's tweets. They're on the ground. They're seeing a man in uniform walking alongside them.
I think it's working for a lot of people. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't know enough about this to be sure, but it smells to me like a political decision. If that guy was out protesting contrary to the wishes of his superiors, you know, I'll eat a rock right now.
So you don't think that people in positions of authority are willing to stand up against their compatriots and say, you guys are criminals?
That doesn't happen at the Missouri State Highway Patrol.
All right. Well, that's fair.
He was there with permission, probably because it was felt that his presence would maybe have a calming effect. I'm not saying that it was bad or anything. I'm just saying that I would be very skeptical that he's jeopardized his position by doing that.
Well, I've got one. You can't knock this one. This one's real positive. This isn't a show. Kalamazoo cop pulls over choking woman, saves her life. This just happened 2 weeks ago, and you can see the dash cam footage on HuffingtonPost.com. It says, what started as a routine traffic stop on Saturday turned out to be a life-saving moment for one Michigan woman. The time the unidentified driver was pulled over, she was choking, and the officer who stopped her saved her life in a scene caught on his dash cam. Pretty cool.
Well, it sure is, and, you know...
They're not people, all bad. Cops aren't all bad.
They're not all bad. And, you know, people sometimes ask me about, you know, being a prosecutor in that. And, you know, oh, okay, well, we'll forgive you, Randy. You were once a monster, even if you're not anymore. They're really not. They're not monsters in their own minds, because they'd be just as likely to help you if you were, you know, stuck by the side of the road or needed CPR or something like that. I mean,
yeah.
They're really no different. They just haven't had their eyes open yet.
Yeah, that's why I have hope for the free and prosperous future. These bad cops, they're going to get new jobs. And the good cops, they'll finally rise in the ranks, be given more responsibility, take more of an active role in producing the free future that we all want to see, and taking their hands off of the people who've already had enough government. What do you say, Randy?
I'm for it.
All right, we hope we calm the hamster in your brain tonight.
Good night, Derek.
Good night, Randy. Worms.